Hey, what's up, everybody? My name is Mario Picciardo, and this is the second episode of Methods. I am now going to start putting up these podcasts on CastBox. So you guys can go to the CastBox app on the Android or the App Store on the Google Play Store on Android or the Apple App Store for iOS devices. So in case you guys are wondering, or if you go through an internet browser on a laptop or a desktop, you can go to castbox.fm and be able to get the recordings there. Now, if you're listening to this, you probably already found your way to an audio source, but just for anybody who's getting it from another channel, I'm saying that, so in case anybody's wondering, that's where the updates are going to be happening, if you're seeing this from somewhere else for some reason, whatever. So, when we ended the last episode, we were talking about the first episode. We were talking about the first five laws related to human nature. And I told you guys about Charlie Munger and his whole story. And, there's a couple of things that I was thinking about today before we jump into it. And for those of you, again, who don't really know, and of course you wouldn't, because unless you saw the first episode at this point, but this podcast is called Methods, and Methods is really about me just kind of sharing my ideas about, or my thoughts and opinions about various different things, in a way for me to guess, to me it's therapeutic, but I think for you guys can kind of get a view into how someone else really thinks about things, and hopefully, I like to learn a lot of things. Hopefully some of the things that I've learned throughout my time in my studies can be of value to someone else. And there's also the part of it where, you're kind of like sharing ideas or teaching someone else a specific thing. It kind of it really strengthens your own retention of that information. So I think it's beneficial all around. I think also, it allows you to kind of get to know someone or have a conversation with someone and gestate, as it were, on those ideas. But so I was thinking today about something. I don't remember exactly what triggered the thought, but this thought is that people's emotions control their routines. In other words, what that means is, and again, it may sound obvious, but what it means is that when you get out of work, that feeling that you have of getting out of work, it automatically changes your thoughts, right? So if you get out of work and you're tired, you're immediately going to be thinking about things that you can do to relax. And typically, when you look at your day from day to day, you don't even really remember individual days. You remember a huge glob of you doing certain things and certain results happening. That happens often enough. And that really becomes kind of the story of your life. I mean, I think for a lot of people, their lives really don't change too much. Unless something really drastic happens, someone gets fired, or someone dies in the family, or, some traumatic, emotional, maybe you get into an accident, God forbid. But usually, our lives are pretty static. There's not usually a lot going on in terms of changes from day to day. And even if your day involves a lot of different things, at some point, you kind of get used to these changes happening, and once that happens, you start to get into a rhythm or a cadence, you kind of know what to expect, so to speak. And it actually, for the human mind, it gives you a sanity, because if every day was something that you just could not anticipate and your mind was spinning, wondering what's going to happen next, I mean, you'd be exhausted just from the anticipation or trying to, you know, can you, I mean, just imagine a world where nothing was set in stone and everything could change at any moment. I mean, you really, for humans, I think that's a very scary thought or a very scary idea. And saying that is just to ground the fact that, you know, us using emotions, using thoughts, or getting into habitual patterns is very human. It's very human, and it's part of what allows us to make sense of the world. It's also why when something traumatic happens that gets us out of that rhythm, you know, we can really find ourselves lost in our identities as people, and our just our basic thoughts about what we even think that the world means. For example, you know, if I have an identity as being a runner, or not even as a profession, but if I identify myself as someone who's able-bodied, you know, who can walk to work every day, who can walk to go, you know, to maybe can play sports, you know, and run, and you know, someone who's on their feet a lot, and then they get into an accident and lose a leg or a stroke, God forbid, and something, and then they just can't move their lower extremities. I mean, that for any person, I mean, really destroys a foundation that, you know, of things that we take for granted. And then it's like, wow, I mean, I really have to rebuild the way that I even see the world, because this my whole life experience now is completely different, and I need to build a new persona, a new character under which I can make sense of myself. And I think what people miss a lot of the time is how much your emotions and your thoughts kind of feed off of each other, kind of like a, you know, a circle of arrows pointing to each other, you know, where it just moves, and you just kind of see that one thing just leads to the other thing, which leads back to the initial. And I think that that's really how, you know, your thoughts are really working. And then of course you have your actions, which encapsulates the routine between a thought and the feeling, which come together, bring about an action. And then in your mind, you validate that action, especially if you do it more and more often, you end up with a habit. And then the habit, of course, is then triggered by, you know, as soon as you leave work, you usually have a routine. You get into your car, you turn on, you take a specific route, and all of these things, you know, kind of become a part of just a habitual part of what we do. You know, and the thoughts that you think as you're on your way home, all those things you think about, they're typically the same day in and day out. I mean, it's why we can predict how someone else is going to act when we're talking to them. And so, you know, I was thinking about that because, you know, the part of it that has to do with emotion, the part of it that has to do with the fact of how strongly your emotions play a part in your life experience is, I think, something that really might be underscored. And I think that because, well, it's something that I have completely kind of like glossed over in a way where I was like, wow, I was like, I never really sat down and really thought about or considered how much just the emotion part of it. Because, you know, you hear, I think we hear a lot about, like, you know, law of attraction, or the idea that your thoughts create your reality. But you really kind of forget that it's, well, yes, your thoughts have a big part to play in it, and in thought inducement, or I'm sorry, emotional inducement into your thoughts definitely strengthens those neural connections in your brain, which create habits or new ways of thinking faster for yourself. But we also have to remember that that's also working in the opposite way, where we have not only habitual thoughts that we need to change, but emotions that are embedded in those thoughts. There's real emotions. And not only that are embedded in the thoughts, but there are thoughts that are embedded in the emotions, depending on what we're doing and where we're doing it. I mean, it's classic Pavlovian conditioning when you think about it. You know, it's this idea that, you know, I have a dog, and every time I ring a bell, I'm going to give him food. And so when that bell rings, what we have to remember is, well, the dog isn't just tying the sound of the bell ringing to food. The dog is tying the experience of being happy and overjoyed by the fact that it is hearing, it knows that it's going to be fed. You know, that kind of excitement of, yes, food, this is going to be good. You see, that feeling is what gets that dog to make that action, you know, because humans are, again, and a lot of other animals too, but, you know, I'm going to just stick to humans here and say that humans are definitely centered in a basis of their own desires over what may be beneficial for a group, because oftentimes being selfish or looking after one's own interests is really a huge part of human nature. And it's really something that God, when Adam and Eve are in the Garden of Eden, God really detests, because that whole idea of human nature of wanting, you know, of eating of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil shows man now that gives man the taste of what it means to idolize the self, or to be selfish, or to know what is good and what is bad, because man knows that he can put himself now before other people. You know, and before, man did not have that ability. And so when he gains his nature, you know, and God sees this, God actually proclaims, God says, God, in the Bible, in Genesis, God says, you know, he's grieved. The Bible describes him as being very sad, very wrought by the fact that he created humans. After he sees all of the destruction and the turmoil that they can bring about, you know, and that's really sobering, because it means that when you think about it, that our Creator would look at who we have become, or what sin has done to us, or the fact that we would turn towards it, you know, and really bring about so much destruction in our own society. Now, I don't want to get too much off topic more than I already have, but you know, this idea of sin and this idea of what sin is and how we get to sin. And, you know, to tie it all back, you know, it's that idea of thought and emotion that kind of play off of each other, that lead into these greater things, that is really at the core of what human nature is. And that's, so that was one thing that I was thinking about. I made another note here. I just wanted to bring that up. And just to elaborate a bit further, I think that when you have your emotions that way, you also kind of, you use your emotions to kind of rationalize your actions. And that's where the thoughts are born out of the emotions. So if you feel sad, you know, if you feel sad, you start asking yourself, well, why do I feel sad? And then you find an answer for yourself, or you say, oh, I'm sad because of, you just tie it to something that's going on in your life in that moment. You say, oh, well, I haven't talked to anybody in a while. I feel sad. I feel lonely. You know, you kind of, your thoughts and, you know, and there's this idea that, you know, your thoughts really create your perspective, or there's two things. There's a thing that happens, and then what you make the thing that happens mean. And I think that meaning is really has heavily tied towards our emotions, or the thought that we say, oh, well, I feel this way because of this person. Now, you know, out of our thoughts are born the emotion. So it kind of works both ways in that way. I hope that I'm not going too fast. I'm not speaking too fast, or I am hard to follow in any kind of way, or I kind of jump around too much. If you guys experience any of that, or you think that's you find that to be hard to really understand or listen to, Please let me know and I'll be sure to kind of make those changes. But anyway, we will continue on here. So the other thing I wanted to mention was, let's see, there's a feeding loop between emotions and thoughts. We talked about that. Human nature is naturally swayed towards incentives. Right. And so this already we kind of touched on a little bit here, but that human nature is swayed towards incentives. And we call a person heroic who actually steps aside from the selfish human nature and the benefit of other people. That's that idea that, you know, humans, again, when we think about the Garden of Eden and the idea of sin, sin is really born out of selfishness. And the very interesting thing about it is that we actually praise or look up to or trust or give all of these great social benefits to people who actually go against human nature. And how mind-boggling is that? Because when you really think about it, if human nature is bent towards our own, you know, incentives to do things, and that leads to selfish action, and we praise people who are not selfish, really what we're saying is we're praising a denial of human nature. And I think that when I thought about that, I was like, wow. We're praising a denial of human nature. That really means that even as a secular society, a society that does not believe in God, we praise, we don't praise selfish action. We don't. And in fact, because I think that we realize that it's anti-societal benefit. And that whole idea is very interesting too, I think, because Western societies really idolize the idea of being your own person, like being an independent person. You know, that is really an idea that's taken to the next level, that's really idolized. And, you know, when you think about that idea that we're idolizing independence, really what we're saying is that, because when you really think about it, I mean, you see it in the movies, you see it in the media, this idea that, well, if I idolize, if self-achievement is so great, and, you know, everything's about doing your own thing, doing what you want, well, where's society in that? What about the societal well-being? You know, if we have a bunch of people who are all independent leaders, well, then who's gonna who's there to follow? You know, you kind of have a house going in seven directions, but where's the unity? You know, and that's the idea. That's the idea is that people say, oh, be independent, be independent, be independent, be independent. Yeah, but who was the person who downplayed dependence, or who's the person that downplayed obedience? What was wrong with obedience in the first place? I mean, when you look at any well-functioning group, there is a level of obedience. There's one leader. There's one person who goes out there and leads the way, and other people follow that person. It's not bad to follow. It's just not. And, you know, this idea that everyone needs to be a leader too is just not something that I think is really based in reality, because when I think you look at a society, you know, you want to see a society prosper, really what you're saying is that you want to see people bonding together, people submitting under the authority of other people, not for any nefarious reason, but quite the opposite, because they want to see the entire society grow and flourish. And they know that the only way to do that is to submit under an idea of this is how, under a single vision, in order so that they can all work together to achieve that reality. You know, if you're trying to achieve different realities all at the same time that cannot coexist by their very nature, well, then we don't have, then we just cannot have that. It's like trying to mix oil and water. How can you have two different conflicting ideologies coexist. It's like saying that that's the idea of saying that both Muslims and Christians can coexist in a society, you know? Sure, they can, but one of them's going to have to give something up about their very innate religion, religious affiliations. You know, when you look at the context of these two religions, for example, they cannot coexist. They just cannot. And that's not, you know, a statement hating any individual group. It's just a fact. You cannot have these two groups coexist in the same general area. If you have, particularly if you have radical Islamists, for example. But anyway, so I wanted to talk about that, this idea of human nature as something that is really interesting, because we really praise it when people are acting against it. And I think it's also really interesting because when you look at the Bible, when you look at a character, when you look at Jesus, the Jesus of Nazareth, he's someone who really had to live his whole life. The only person that we really know of who lived a perfect life here on earth. He's the only person who made it a clean life without sin. And that means that Jesus literally in his whole life did not allow himself to give in to temptation, did not allow himself to have nefarious thoughts against someone else, you know. And when you look at the life of this man, you really learn a lot of lessons. And perhaps one of the greatest lessons is not only Christ's aversion to sinning, but the fact that he was very very willing to defy authority for the benefit of God. You know, he knew that love, that the true definition, the true reasoning of love is not the idea that, you know, you let people do whatever they want. That's not what love is. But that the idea of love is that you do tell people that they're doing things that are not correct, not because you don't care about them, but in fact the opposite, because you do. Because, for example, the Bible says that homosexuality is not okay. I mean, that's a very explicit idea that's talked about in scripture. And, you know, if you know someone who is a homosexual, you know, and you're having a conversation about, well, does God ordain homosexuality? Well, the answer is no. And really so there's two really arguments, where one is that, well, saying something like that is wrong. And why is it wrong? Because it's bigoted. It's not showing love to this person. And then the other side of that is to say, well, you see, our definitions of love are different. You see, you have one group of people who believe in love in the name of allowing someone to do whatever they want, and another person whose definition of love is a lot closer to really a parent who says, you know, because when you think of your parent as someone who really loves you, well, they fight for you too. And so, you know, if the parent sees that, well, for example, you're not doing so well in school, they will reprimand you. But you see, the reprimand doesn't come because they enjoy seeing you suffer. No, it comes because they see typically the bigger picture, or they see you going down a path that they don't want to see you go down, because they know that it will not end well for you. So while you may not be suffering now, they know that you will pay the price, and that it is a price that that they love you enough to put themselves in a position where they have to endure the fires of persecution, you know, being told, oh, you're a bad person, oh, because they love you so much They care about you so much. That is a real act of love because it is self-sacrificing for the fact that they are trying to share truth with you so that they can give you an opportunity to really amend or repent from your wrongdoings, you know? And we don't even have to talk about it really from a biblical point of view. We don't have to talk about any of this stuff. I'm just using it as an example. You know, there are other secular examples we could use. I mean, for example, and maybe it actually even makes it a lot clearer. So if we take, for example, you know, let's take the idea of a bike. You know, if you, or motorcycle I think is a good one. You know, let's try to make it a little harder to kind of do here. Let's talk about let's talk about our children. You know, when we have a child, right, and we see them hanging out with people that we self-identify as kind of, you know, sketchy people, or my children going to sketchy neighborhoods, you know, we worry about their well-being. And so, or even as a friend, it doesn't even have to be a parent. If I see a friend of mine going down a path that I know is not going to be good for his well-being, well, I'm not going to tell him, you know, Paul, yeah, go, you know, hang out with those people, you know, even though I don't really trust them, or I get a vibe that they're not good people. You know, one group would say, hey, you know, like, you know, your friend's going to be fine, don't worry about it, let them do whatever they want. And then another group is going to say, well, no, hold on, you know, I don't think you should do this. You know, I don't think you're going down the right path. I don't think you're doing the right thing, you know, and your friend really gets involved in this group and it becomes really a part of who they are and their character, you know, and you really have the guts to go up to your friend and say, hey, you need to stop doing this. You know, this isn't good for you. You shouldn't be hanging out with this group of people. They're going to put you down in the long run. First off, that takes a lot of guts. You know what I mean? That's why a lot of people wouldn't be willing to do it. But the idea is that's the whole point. Doing it is a self-sacrificing act for the benefit of your neighbor, you know, and which is encapsulated in the law of Christ. And that idea of self-sacrifice and going out there and willing to see, that is an act of love, where not an act of love would be telling that person, oh no, yeah, go do whatever you want, you know, love. Because you see, I think the idea of love has been conflated. The biblical definition of love is that love of calling people out. You see, there's no benefit to me for calling you out. In fact, I have things to lose because you're going to see me in a negative light if at least at first, because it's going to create tension and conflict between us. It is a lot easier for me to just say, oh no, yeah, go do what you want, I love you, than for me to sit down with you and really risk our relationship and say, hey, you know, I completely disagree with this thing that you're doing. You know, there's two really different ideas of love. And to really think about it, I think that, you know, we need to get back to an idea of what love meant biblically, which is this idea that if you really love someone, you're going to fight for them. Not even in a religious context, but, you know, when you see someone doing something that you really don't think is a good idea, you're going to tell them, you're going to be a straight shot. You know, you're going to say, hey, I don't think you should do this. I don't think you should do that. Because I don't see it working out well for you. And this idea of love, oh, you know, let this person go do whatever they want. Well, that biblically is not a definition of love. You know, and I don't think it's one that we should jump to encourage. I think that rather than, I know we're starting to get political here, but rather than getting into, someone shouldn't do this, or oh, someone shouldn't do that, or rather than get into, oh, let's just let everybody do whatever they want, I think that, you know, we really need to sit down and reevaluate what is, what kind of a society do we want to be? What kind of values do we want to instill in people? And do we want people to fight for each other? Do we want people to fight for the greater good? And so I just wanted to talk about those two things. Actually, you know, it's kind of funny that I think that is actually all the time that we have, and we didn't even get back to where we were with going through the cognitive biases. But I think this is a good chat. I kind of like the direction that these podcasts are going in, even though it's only the second one. I can kind of see more about how I can kind of start to see more opportunities here. I think I'm also getting a lot more comfortable doing it now that it's the second time around. And so now the third time, you know, I kind of have a bit more of a cadence going here. But so in the next episode, I will include some more thoughts. I'll bring you guys, I'm going to, you know, kind of sit down and talk about it. If you guys have any questions or things that you'd want me to cover, you know, feel free to do that. Otherwise, I definitely have a ton of material to go through, and we could just keep going in this format. You know, eventually, if, you know, we start to get to episode 25, 30, I guess depending on how many viewers we have, we might do something where we start, you know, getting people in, and we can do interview style, and just with people just kind of bounce back and forth ideas and thoughts and kind of see where other people are at. And, you know, to kind of have a bit of a counterbalance and that kind of thing. But I really enjoy doing these things for you guys. I hope you guys enjoy listening to them. And yeah, so with that, guys, I will end it here, and I'll see you guys in the next one. We'll meet up next week, and hopefully we'll get a chance to get through some of the other cognitive biases that we have on the list. And all right, take it easy, guys. I'll see you guys in the next one.